Good morning. Welcome to this session of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Oral arguments regularly occur in the courtroom of the Thomas J. Moyer Ohio Judicial Center in Columbus. But today we are sitting in Buckeye Local High School in Jefferson County. Today marks the 82nd session of off-site court. Each year, the Supreme Court hears oral arguments in a local community so more citizens can see the court in action. We are honored today to have been invited by Judge Michelle Miller of the Jefferson County Court of Common Pleas. Thank you, Judge, for the invitation and your gracious hospitality. Thank you also to our host, Buckeye Local High School, Principal Lucas Parsons, and his team for their work leading up to this day. High school students are also here from Buckeye Local, Edison, Steubenville, Indian Creek, Toronto, Steubenville Catholic Central, Jefferson County Christian School, Jefferson County Joint Vocational School, and Harrison Central, and students who are homeschooled in the area. Teachers and local volunteer attorneys have worked with classes leading up to today, teaching about the appellate process and reviewing materials about today's cases. Teachers from each school have received summary articles previewing the cases that we will hear today. They were written from the public information staff at the court. Anyone can access those articles at courtnewsohio.gov. Thanks to Jefferson County Bar Association and the Educational Service Center for their support as well. And to the attorneys arguing today for agreeing to participate in discussions with students after the arguments. Thank you. Because of the experience today, we hope students will study the law and return home to serve the legal needs of families and the less fortunate in underserved communities around Ohio. Today, the three cases we will hear reflect the variety of cases that we decide and the duties of the judiciary has as one of the three branches of government. In one case, the parties disagree over the meaning of a particular contract language of a contract that was entered into 75 years ago. In that case, we will be exercising our role in peaceably resolving a dispute among private parties. In another, which involves two criminal cases arising from one incident, we consider whether the investigation by police met the requirements of the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the State of Ohio. It is the duty of the courts to guarantee that criminal defendants are treated fairly and that defendants are afforded their constitutional rights. And in a third case, we will address the parties' differing views of what constitutes a government record that must be produced for citizens' review. In that case, we will be interpreting statutes and determining whether the government has a duty to the citizens and that whether the government failed to live up to that duty. Resolving disputes, ensuring the preservation of rights under the Constitution, and operating as a check and balance on the assertion of authority of another branch of government are all important aspects of what we do as a court. And you will see all of that here today. The parties and lawyers will appear here today are at the final stage of a very long process. All of them have already appealed a lower court's determination to an intermediate appellate court and came to this court asking for one last look. They have written their briefs, responded to the other side brief, and prepared to make their final arguments in the court here today. We too have been at work reviewing the arguments of the parties and reviewing the law. Some of us will have questions to ask to clarify certain issues. By the time we leave your community, we will have settled on a tentative decision. One of us will be assigned the job of writing the opinion and explaining why the majority of the court arrived at that decision. And perhaps others will write opinions explaining why they disagree. In due time, the decision will be announced. Some may not be happy with the final decision, particularly if the case doesn't go their way. But everyone can remain confident in a system where the laws and the rules are applied fairly and consistently to everyone. Once again, Thank you to the entire Jefferson County community for inviting us here for Offsite Court. To our audience and viewers, welcome to this official session of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Marshal, will you call the court to order? In our first case this morning, 2022-1227, 2022-1238, in the matter of State of Ohio versus Jessica Dunlap, 2022-1229, 2022-1237, in the matter of the State of Ohio versus Jabril Lewis. On behalf of the appellants, Mr. Burling. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Thank you for agreeing to be here today.
Good morning, Your Honors, Chief Justice Kennedy, Associate Justices. As you noted, my name is Nick Burling with the Geauga County Prosecutor's Office on behalf of Appellant State of Ohio in this matter. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of time for my co-counsel with the Attorney General's Office and 3 minutes for rebuttal, so I will be speaking for 7 minutes. May I proceed?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, in this case, the state is asking the court to establish a bright line rule that whenever a police officer makes a valid traffic stop, the officer is authorized under the Fourth Amendment to inquire of the driver of his or her identity and his or her license status. And establishing that rule would be consistent with both the United States and Ohio Supreme Court precedent dealing with the Fourth Amendment and traffic stops. Specifically because that rule would insulate against abuses of the officer having to exercise unconstrained discretion that is of particular concern in Fourth Amendment cases. Here, an officer conducted a traffic stop in which he ran a license plate and saw that the registered owner, Jessica Dunlap, was under a license suspension. Pursuant to U.S. Supreme Court case of Kansas v. Glover, so long as that officer does not have other facts in his possession that would undermine the assumption that the registered owner is driving, he's allowed to make that stop. Here, all parties agree, based on that cruiser video that we have, that the officer really could not see who was driving, so he legitimately had this valid, reasonable suspicion that the registered owner was driving under suspension. And after several seconds, about 10 seconds of interacting with the driver, he then develops additional reasonable suspicion to believe that this particular driver is not licensed.
What were the facts that led the officer to believe that the driver wasn't licensed?
Well, as he approaches the window and he notices the driver does not match the description of the registered owner, he explains the reason for a stop and he immediately asks that driver, "Are you licensed?" And sort of a normal response you would expect is like either yes or no. Instead, we have I think so, if not, she is. And
let me ask you, if the driver had responded yes, would the officer have been able to continue further and ask for his proof of that?
Well, we are asking the court to establish a bright-line rule allowing for that, and I do think allowing that would be consistent with the Fourth Amendment.
But under the circumstances of this case, once he pulled over the car and established that the owner, the unlicensed owner, was sitting in the passenger seat, correct?
Correct.
The suspicion about criminal activity had stopped at that point, right?
Well, that's part of the basis for that initial stop. But if you look at, and I know that one of the big issues here is State v. Chatton, which establishes basically that principle. But since Chatton was decided, the United States Supreme Court has decided Rodriguez versus United States, and this court has decided both Robinette 3, as well as State v. Orr. Robinette established that even after the purpose of the traffic stop is done, in that case it was the issuance of a speeding ticket, and the officer kept the driver there for a brief amount of time to ask him a follow-up question about whether or not there was any contraband in the vehicle. The court held that even though no reasonable suspicion at that point existed, the small inconvenience and delay in holding that officer, that driver there, was justified because of the great public purpose, vital interest in following up on the state's interest in making sure that the laws are obeyed.
So let me follow up with Justice Donnelly's question. Totally different circumstance. In that case, an officer is issuing a citation for a violation of law.
Correct.
Here, the only cause for the stop is running the registration and finding that the owner of the car is under suspension.
Correct.
As the officer approaches the window, it is very clear that the person who is registered to the car, who's unlicensed, is not the driver of the car. You can see that just by physical features. Why does that not end the purpose for the stop? Because it's clearly not the young lady.
Because at that point, the purpose of the stop is both establishing whether or not the registered owner is driving, but also taking into consideration the state's vital interest in ensuring that only registered or only licensed drivers are on the road. That was also part of the stop.
Well, then, but then by that reason, then officers can stop any car just to check on driver license suspensions or lack thereof.
Well, that the United States Supreme Court has held in Delaware v. Prowse that you cannot do random traffic stops to check on whether or not the drivers are licensed, because they determined, while it is a great vital interest to determine whether or not only licensed drivers are on the road, that requires the officer to use his unconstrained discretion. So he's just on his own picking which cars to stop with no basis. Here, everyone agrees the basis of this stop was valid. This car was legally stopped. And at that point, we're taking it out of that concern of the unfettered discretion of the officer, because we get to review what he did. We have the cruiser video. He gets to be cross-examined on the stand at a suppression hearing. We exchange discovery. So his question or his determination, which is based up by with facts, it's not being done just on his own discretion. So the stop is valid. At that point, the state's interest in ensuring that only licensed drivers are on the road is of great is so strong, and the interference with that with the driver's privacy interest is so little because he's already been stopped. Just being allowed to ask these further questions to follow up on the state's interest, you know, the Robinette decision indicating that you can ask questions about vital interests, and I would note even State v. Orr allowing for stops, I'm blanking on the name for them, but the standard stop of all vehicles at a checkpoint to determine a license was justified. And again, those cars are being stopped without any basis at all other than to deal with the state's interest in ensuring that licensed drivers
are on the road. Do you see those random stops or controlled stops similar to an officer exercising discretion? Like, if there's a plan in place, we're going to stop every fifth car and check for license and registration or sobriety. Is that any different than an officer deciding which car he or she is going to stop by discretion?
Well, if you're talking about the officer just on his own without having facts like we did in this
case.
Right,
just randomly.
That would be significantly different because a plan has been put in place. People driving up are going to see officers standing there stopping every however many cars. And so people are going to be on notice and be prepared.
But what does being on notice do for you? Can you back out of the line and say, oh, I don't want to be stopped by the police, so let me go the other direction?
And I think you probably could unless the officers stop you. But in that case, when this court upheld the license point checkpoints, they cited specifically to Delaware v. Prowse, which the Supreme Court noted, while the random stops with no basis were not allowed, that did not necessarily prevent the states from establishing procedures for spot checks to do this in another way, in a way that it is not left up to the specific officer's discretion. So it's not one officer standing there saying, I'm going to stop you. It's come in line every few. It's not really up to his discretion.
So a moment ago you said that the car was legally stopped.
Correct.
So there are two pieces of information that would create probable cause to stop. At the time of the stop, you only had one piece, that the registered owner was under suspension. You didn't know who was actually operating the vehicle. Wouldn't you have needed to know that there was at least the operator of the vehicle was an individual that met the general description of the young lady in order to give you probable cause to believe that criminal activity is afoot? You need her or a general description of her and a reasonable belief it is her. But you're making a stop and you don't know who's operating the car. So how is that a legally stopped car?
So we go back to the Kansas v. Glover case from the United States Supreme Court that said as long as you don't have facts that would undermine the assumption that the registered owner is driving, you are allowed to make a stop and it's considered valid. And here, the officer could not see who was in the driver's seat. The dash cam video, I think, is pretty clear. It's sort of an overcast day. Looking through that back rear windshield, you really can't see much of anything. You might see a dark top of the head, but that's it. So at that point, under U.S. Supreme Court precedent, he's allowed to stop that vehicle. And it's only until he actually makes his approach and interacts with the driver that does he see that the
So he gets to the driver's door and sees it's not a woman. Why not just turn around and walk away?
Well, because I don't think that that's consistent with the case law that has developed since Chatton, specifically, again, Robinette, or as well as Rodriguez versus United States, which indicated that asking, apart from determining whether to issue a citation for the license or the driving violation, there are other parts naturally part of a traffic stop, one of which is running a license and checking warrants. So that's part of the whole traffic stop investigation. So while he's taking care of one part, he's not finished the other part.
Is it possible that this is actually two stops? Because the individual he was interested in was in the passenger seat. Even though she owned the car, she wasn't driving. So at that point, that stop was over because he found that he had no reason to detain her because she wasn't driving. So is there any basis for saying that once that happened, he decided to continue to detain them, which constituted a second stop, this time of Jabril?
And Your Honor, I'll address that. I just want to note I am going to save some time for my co-counsel. But I think in this case, I don't know that I would characterize it as two separate stops. I think it's one stop that the officer has taken care of one portion of his stop, but he still is continuing on to finish the second portion to make sure that this owner or this driver is allowed to be on the roadway.
But it's two separate criminal cases.
Yes, because of what was found ultimately in the vehicle after the officer had checked licenses and found out both were under suspension and could not be driving, so they had to tow the vehicle.
So you're looking for essentially a happy ending to this, meaning that the police officer, when they make a stop and find out there's no basis for it, can go ahead and save face, what have you, and ask for identification when there's no real reason to ask for identification. Couldn't the officer just as easily have said, ma'am, your license is suspended, but yet you own this car, I'm going to advise you not to be driving this car, and then just left at that point? I mean, he still would have been able to kind of caution her to be careful, but why did he have to go further?
I guess one concern is we're talking about a specific case here, but the court's rule here is going to be applied across the board. And while it was pretty clear in this situation that the driver did not match the registered owner's description, that's not going to be the case in all of them. And in some cases, it's going to be a much closer call. And then you're going to, again, leave it up to the discretion of the officer that, well, I think this person doesn't really match, so I'm going to continue on. While another officer in that same position or the court reviewing that might say, well, no, actually, I think it's that was the description was close enough, so they should have stopped. And I think that's where you are then, again, getting into the unfettered discretion of the officer, because he's going to have to make that split-second decision. But if we give a bright-line rule then everybody's treated the same way. The officers know every time they make a stop, they can inquire into this.
And if you have, for instance, if this were two males or two females, and the officer wouldn't know, but here it was clear because it was a female that owned the car, didn't have the license, and it was a male who was driving. I mean, in the situation that you're positing, wouldn't it be reasonable then for the officer to ask for identification?
Well, I think it would be, but I still think that you are going to potentially run into situations where it's going to be a close call, and you're going to be fighting in court over how closely the driver matches the description. And so, again, if we impose the bright line rule, we take that issue off the table. Everyone, both the police and the public, then know when you get stopped legally, this is the process that happens. I think you get around the concern of the Supreme Court with relying just on the officer's discretion on whether or not, in that specific instance, to pursue the matter further or not.
You're well into Mr. Cordova's time. Mr. Cordova.
Thank you, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. This license check was valid for two reasons. First, Supreme Court precedent approves it, and second, it comports with a bright line rule that would benefit all parties. But let me take precedent first. Rodriguez v. United States establishes that the lawful mission of a traffic stop involves two independent components. The first is investigating the precise reason for the stop, and the second is conducting a license check and other incidental inquiries. The Fourth Amendment allows a license check regardless of the precise reason for the stop because the license check serves its own independent traffic safety purpose of ensuring that vehicles are operated safely and responsibly. So the license check in this case was valid as serving that second component of the stop's lawful mission, even if the license check was unrelated to investigating the precise reason for the stop itself.
Didn't the mission of the stop end when the officer figured out this person wasn't wasn't the driver?
Rodriguez tells us that that isn't the case.
So where in Rodriguez does it say that? Because I don't see that.
Because in Rodriguez, the reason for the stop was that the driver had driven onto the shoulder of the road, so the officer was able to write the warning ticket for that offense that he did without requesting the driver's license at all. Nonetheless, the officer did request the license and run the license. He also requested and ran the passenger's license, which took approximately 21 minutes, yet the court found that the Fourth Amendment was not violated in this delay because it explains on page 355 of its decision that the ordinary inquiries incident to the stop are also part of the stop's lawful mission. So that tells us that the mission was not yet complete until the license check had been conducted. In this case, the license check also served to investigate the precise reason for the stop itself, though. The reason for the stop, of course, being to determine whether the registered owner was driving the vehicle, and a license check confirmed that the driver was not the registered owner. So the question wasn't so much who is behind the wheel, but whether the person behind the wheel is the registered owner.
Well, isn't Rodriguez distinguishable like the other case that was mentioned earlier, because law enforcement's issuing a ticket for a moving violation, so they cross the fog line and they're getting a warning or a ticket that's distinctive here because there is no moving violation?
Well, that doesn't explain why the license check of the passenger was permissible in Rodriguez. Furthermore, it can't be that the commission of one traffic offense justifies an unrelated inquiry. Again, the license check in Rodriguez did not serve to investigate the reason for the stop, so it had to be an independent justification that isn't dependent on investigating the traffic violation. The court made that clear in specifying a traffic safety justification for the license check itself. Also, I'd like to emphasize that a bright line rule is particularly needed in this context to give officers clear guidance and to protect drivers from state made assumptions based on their appearance. Without a bright line rule, officers would have to make judgments and courts would have to review judgments without any guiding principles. The sort of questions that would arise would be questions such as whether it's reasonable to request a license from a driver who turns out to be 4 inches taller than the registered owner's description, whether that's obvious when the driver's seated, whether it's reasonable to request identification from a driver who appears to be about 40 pounds heavier than the registered owner's description. Does it matter if the driver is wearing a hoodie that might obscure weight? So a bright line rule will protect both drivers and officers, as well as courts, from having to make assumptions.
So you're talking about appearances. So here the driver was black and the passenger was white. And is there anything in the record on what the basis was for the officer to check the tags?
So I would like to clarify, there is no evidence that the officer was aware of the driver's race before of the registered owner's race before he approached the vehicle. The lead system doesn't include that.
Or gender?
So he does have gender, but not race. The lead system did not include race. So he does know the driver's gender when he approaches the vehicle. That's correct.
Except I'm asking why he checked the tags. Does the record tell us why he checked the tag of the did a search based on the license plate to find out that the driver of that vehicle, who owned it, and that they didn't have a license?
His suppression hearing testimony says that he spent his entire 12-hour shift running license checks on cars driving by, and Glover says that it's reasonable to stop a car whose registered owner is under suspension so long as at the time of the stop is initiated there are no facts that would dispel that suspicion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Evans, good morning. Thank you for agreeing to be here today. You're dividing your time?
Yes, ma'am.
And how are you dividing it?
I will be using 7 minutes, and then Mr. Lewis's counsel will take 8.
You may proceed.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Kathleen Evans. I'm here on behalf of my client, Jessica Dunlap. I'm representing Mr. Lewis as his counsel, Rachel Kopeck. We'll be dividing our time as we just discussed. I will address the state's first issue presented for review, and Ms. Kopeck will address the second. When reasonable suspicion for a traffic stop ceases to exist, an officer may not continue to detain the vehicle unless additional facts give rise to new reasonable suspicion. And in this case, when the vehicle is pulled over because the officer suspects that the registered owner is driving under suspension, the stop must cease to exist when the officer learns that someone else is driving the vehicle. Contrary to the state's argument, this is a direct application of State versus Chatton and is consistent with the Supreme Court's subsequent decisions in Rodriguez v. United States and Kansas versus Glover.
Counsel, is it really reasonable to believe that the officer at that point making that determination should just simply say, have a nice day, and turn around and get back in the car? Is it unreasonable to ask the driver if they're licensed to drive?
This court held in State versus Chatton that is what the officer should do. He can explain the reason for the stop, but then the inquiry must end. There should be no inquiry. The stop must end at that point.
Why does the officer get to explain the reason for the stop?
I'm sorry, could you repeat your question?
You said he can be detained, and we have said he can be detained to explain the reason for the stop. Why is that permissible? That's just as much a detention as asking for a license.
Correct. The officer could just, once he saw that someone else was driving the vehicle, he could have turned around and got back in his vehicle. I think in Chatton it's described as a courtesy to the driver to explain why the officer activated their lights and pulled them over, but then determined that there was no reason to suspect criminal activity.
So what if the officer, you know, here it's pretty clear cut, mm-hmm. right, that it wasn't the person who's licensed. But what if it's, you know, kind of a little closer? Maybe the officer has information the driver is a 60-year-old male and it's a 40-year-old male. Can the officer ask for a license then?
Applying this court's holding in Chatton, yes, the officer could do some inquiry to figure out whether that person is the registered owner of the vehicle.
What if it said 60-year-old and 20-year-old? Could the officer ask for a license then?
It's up to the discretion of the officer at that point. The question is, at the time, if it's reasonable.
So how would a reviewing court figure that out?
It's a question of fact that would be left.
It's going to be a fact-specific inquiry in every case. How close the person matched the description? That's what courts would have to do.
The touchdown of the Fourth Amendment is a totality of the circumstances. So in any Fourth Amendment case, we're asking officers.
Well, the Fourth Amendment is actually said to be reasonableness. And I think, wouldn't most people think it's pretty reasonable that once someone's pulled over to ask for their driver's license?
In a case where the officer has reason to suspect that there's criminal activity, that is the case. In this case, it's clear that Mr. Lewis
was not the
driver. Well, the
officer had reason to suspect criminal activity. That's why he pulled him over.
Correct. But once he saw that it wasn't a person matching the owner's description in the driver's seat, there was no longer reasonable suspicion.
I have a question. It's probably best for Ms. Kopek, so she gets to hear it earlier. What right was violated of Mr. Lewis? First of all, let me back up. Is there a difference between a police officer asking for a driver's license versus asking for identification?
In this case, no. Under Chatton, the officer was not permitted to ask any further questions.
Why not?
Under the Fourth Amendment, any further detention was unreasonable. So we are conceding that, yes.
But why was any further detention unreasonable for Mr. Lewis, who was driving a vehicle? I mean, driving is not a right, correct? It's a privilege.
Correct. So once the officer knew that it wasn't Ms. Dunlap driving, he had no reason to suspect that Mr. Lewis was violating the law, and so it was akin to pulling him over just to do a random license check.
Well, how was it okay to ask him, do you have a valid driver's license?
No, he was not permitted to ask any further questions.
So there's no interest, once a stop is legitimate and everybody agrees to that, there can be no further interest in the state even asking the simple question, do you have a valid driver's license?
If the officer had some reason to believe that he didn't, then yes, he could ask that. But from the facts of this case, he had no reason to suspect that Mr. Lewis was unlicensed or was not permitted to be driving.
Okay.
Rodriguez is consistent with this court's holding in Chatton. In Rodriguez, the court held that a police stop exceeding the time needed to handle the matter for which the stop was made violates the Constitution's shield against unreasonable seizures. And here the stop's mission was to determine if Ms. Dunlap was driving without a license. Once that traffic violation was dispelled, there was no longer a reason to ask about a driver's license or any of the other ordinary inquiries mentioned in Rodriguez. And specifically, those inquiries are called incident to the traffic stop.
But let me ask you about Rodriguez, because Rodriguez seems to justify a lot more than just what is necessary to effectuate the stop. In Rodriguez, the officer was allowed to ask for proof of insurance, was allowed to check the passenger's driver's license. None of those things were justified by, if you just said strictly, the mission of the stop, which the officer saw a violation. He could issue a ticket. He didn't need to do that, but the court didn't see any problem with those kind of routine police work. How is this any different?
Yes, I think Chief Justice Kennedy articulated it well. This is similar to, there's two pieces here. So in Rodriguez, there was an observed traffic violation in which allowed the officer to continue that detention and ask these ordinary inquiries
Why would the officer be allowed to ask the passenger for license in Rodriguez? the officer didn't observe the passenger violating the law.
That's not the facts that happened here. Ms. Dunlap wasn't asked for her identification, so I think that
But the question is, I know that's not the facts that happened here, but in Rodriguez, the court didn't see any problem with the officer asking for the passenger's ID. The court seemed to have a vision of a traffic stop that went beyond just strictly doing what's necessary to issue a ticket. So if there's no basis here to ask for a license, why was there a basis in Rodriguez to ask for someone who wasn't driving the car at all's license?
I think the key difference is that the officer there observed a traffic violation. And
but he didn't observe the passenger have a traffic violation.
That's correct. But I think that's the difference is why you can extend the stop in that situation and not in this.
Was it done for purposes of seeing who could drive the car away rather than impound the vehicle? In this case, did the officer, not in this case, I'm trying to think of another case, but is it legitimate for the officer to ask to see driver's license of anyone else in the vehicle if the driver is incapacitated either by law or physically to drive the vehicle so that they can make a decision on whether to impound the vehicle?
I think that would be a question for those specific facts. If that person wanted to drive the vehicle away, then that seems reasonable, but I think that really depends on the facts of that case. I believe that I'm into Ms. Kopeck's time, so if there are no further questions, this court should affirm the 11th District and reject the state's first issue presented for review. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Kopeck.
Chief Justice Kennedy,
Want to raise the microphone. Mm-hmm.
Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court. As stated, I'm Attorney Rachel Kopeck on behalf of Jabrell Lewis. Specifically as it relates to the second issue presented for review, the state of Ohio and the Attorney General's office is asking this court to make a bright line rule that a continued traffic detention is justified under the Fourth Amendment to promote a legitimate public policy of ensuring operators of a vehicle are properly licensed. There is no bright line rule needed for this to occur. While I'm more specifically arguing the policy, the law still applies to what the policy details. The reason for this stop was to see if Jessica Dunlap was driving the vehicle. It was very clear Jessica Dunlap was not driving the vehicle.
But aren't there instances where, we'll say the officer stopped the vehicle and smelled alcohol or drugs, then would you concede that asking for the driver's license would have been fine?
Absolutely, Justice.
Why?
Because there is additional reasonable articulable suspicion that a crime is occurring. Drinking in a car is illegal. Marijuana is illegal in Ohio. If you smell those things,
at least for now, yeah, right.
Correct. If you smell either of those, that there is no dispute that would be a reason to extend the stop. There was nothing here. It was very clear in the record that this stop probably went as well as any officer or driver can hope a stop goes for. There was no odd movements, no smell of alcohol, no smell of marijuana.
Well, then what about the question I asked Ms. Evans earlier? What about the fact that driving is not a right?
Correct,
it is
Your Honor.
A privilege. So because it's a privilege, doesn't the state have an inherent interest in making sure that passengers or that drivers are duly licensed to drive vehicles? And in this case, there's no question that the stop was legitimate. Now, the reason for the stop abated once he found out that Ms. Dunlap wasn't driving, but you still have a person driving a vehicle that has been lawfully stopped. What's the great intrusion of rights to simply say, and the officer asked, do you have a valid driver's license? And the officer could have just said, can I see your driver's license?
So I think that also goes to what Justice Bruner stated earlier, that this is a second stop. So even if the officer said, can I see your license, we would still be here in front of you today, because under Chatton, you are not allowed to continue that detention. There
for violation of Fourth Amendment rights?
Correct, Your Honor.
Even though we're dealing with this isn't like walking down the street,
sure,
where you have a right to walk down the street.
Right.
You don't have a right to drive.
But that would be more equated to like a roving traffic stop, which you are not allowed to do. While there is no dispute that this traffic stop was legal, the reason for the traffic stop ended when he saw that it was Ms. Dunlap. Now, there have been many questions about, well, what if it was a 60-year-old man or a 60-year-old woman, or what if it was a 40-year-old woman or a 30-year-old woman? The law allows exceptions for that. This is not, I think, quite frankly, they're not giving enough credit to police officers to distinguish between a young woman, regardless if race was identified by, I believe, if you look at the transcripts.
The question really isn't giving credit to police officers, it's whether police officers need bright line rules, right? The Fourth Amendment, there's all kinds of context where there may be individual situations where you might say an officer could search, but we apply bright line rules. The automobile exception, Miranda rights, all these things are bright line rules. Why shouldn't there be one here?
There's not one needed, to be completely frank. The reason for a continued stop is if there is reasonable articulable suspicion of the ongoing criminal activity. There simply was not here.
So if Mr. Lewis had, if Mr. Lewis looked 15, that would have been legitimate because the officer might have suspected not licensed to drive.
I would agree with you.
So if just anything articulated other than was Ms. Dunlap driving her car unlawfully?
Yes. Yes, if he looked like he was 15 years old, 12 years old, sure, that's illegal to drive a car that young. You can inquire of your driver's license to ensure that that's going on.
So why in Rodriguez was the officer allowed to ask the passenger for her driver's license?
So I would agree with my co-counsel that the very basis for that stop was that, one, there was a traffic violation.
Right, and, okay. And so the passenger had nothing to do with the traffic violation, right? It was completely, that cannot be tied to the stop. So why was the officer allowed to ask the passenger for their license?
So, but once there was a traffic violation that occurred, continued detention was allowable under the Fourth Amendment.
Okay, well, that sounds like what happened here then.
But the reason for the stop ended once he realized there was not an ongoing concern.
But in Rodriguez, the reason for the stop was that there was a traffic violation. All the officer had to do was write a ticket.
Sure.
So the officer at least extends the stop somewhat to ask that question,
mm-hmm,
to run the, there's no problem. The Supreme Court apparently doesn't see a problem. So,
well, the Supreme Court also had the opportunity to make this bright line rule and did not do so. The language there is that on a typical case,
well, they kind of did make a bright line rule, right? They said that the officers can do things that complete the mission of the stop, including running license checks, searching for warrants.
So the bright line rule, and I believe my time is up, if I can finish answering the question. The rule in Rodriguez is that typically such inquiries involving checking driver's license, determining whether or not there's outstanding warrants against the driver, and inspecting the automobile's registration and proof of insurance are reasonable upon a stop. But that was upon a traffic violation. So if I was speeding.
So the distinguishing factor is there was a violation,
correct,
in Rodriguez and there wasn't,
yeah,
here?
If I was speeding in my car, I would expect to have to turn over those documents. If I was driving my father's car, who's 30 years older than me, doesn't look like me, I would not expect to have to turn over all those items because he had a suspended license and I did not, when I did not commit a traffic violation. Thank you.
Thank you. You used all your time, but I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, I just want to touch on Chatton briefly. That case dealt with a vehicle being stopped because the officer did not observe any valid license plates. As he approached, he saw a temporary tag laying in the back of the vehicle. And at the time, there was no law regarding where that tag had to be displayed. The court held, as soon as he saw that tag, the reason for the stop ended, he could not continue any further detention. And it likened this case to the random stops that are prohibited in Prowse. And respectfully, I think that's an incorrect comparison because this was not just a random stop. The officer at the time of the stop had a factual basis for the stop. And so I do think Chatton incorrectly compared it to random stops. And
isn't Chatton about prolonging the stop?
No, Chatton's about, Chatton holds, as soon as you see there that your reason for pulling him over was incorrect, you have to stop anything. They say that you're allowed to explain the reason for the stop, but going to Justice Stewart's question about if you smell marijuana, I'm not sure that under Chatton that it's clear you could, in fact, continue detention at the time.
Chatton is about prolonging the stop of the officer's own accord, because you talked about unfettered discretion, without some other indicia of suspicion. So what other indicia of suspicion was there?
Under Chatton?
No, here.
Well,
for the officer.
What we're arguing is that Chatton's incorrect on that, and that.
So you think that Chatton should be overruled?
Well, I think it's been basically overruled by further precedent that we've cited. Rodriguez, Robinette.
U.S. Supreme Court.
Correct. And Chatton was based on interpretation of the Fourth Amendment and not the
of the United States Constitution.
It was not.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.